Hi, I'm Margot Martindale, the host of Foreign Policy's new podcast, I Spy. Spies don't talk. It's one of the rules of the business. But here at Foreign Policy, we get them to open up. Each week, one former operative from somewhere around the world tells the story of one dramatic mission. Subscribe to I Spy wherever you get your podcasts.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Sarah Wildman, and this is First Person. This week, Jeremy Corbyn and the Jews. On December 12th, British voters go to the polls for another general election. At stake, of course, is whether Britain will leave the European Union. But another issue has become central to the campaign: the accusations that Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn has not adequately addressed anti-Semitism in the party.
Good evening. We start with Labour's response to the strong criticism by the chief rabbi of Jeremy Corbyn's handling of cases of anti-Semitism in the party. Ephraim Mervis, Britain's most senior Jewish leader, said that a poison of anti-Semitism had taken root in the Labour Party.
Mr. Corbyn said Corbyn assumed leadership of the Labour Party in 2015. Immediately, some members of the Jewish community asked him to account for actions they perceived as troubling, including apparent relationships with Holocaust deniers. The party launched an internal inquiry, but the charges and missteps have only mounted.
Within the Labour Party, anti-Semitism is now more commonplace, it is more conspicuous, and it is more corrosive.
Stephen Pollard is the editor of the Jewish Chronicle in London. He has followed and reported on the question of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party for several years. He's our guest today. Hi, Stephen. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So I wanted to talk to you about how Corbyn's relationship to the Jewish community, when people started looking at it.
Well, the truth about Jeremy Corbyn's relationship with the Jewish community is that there wasn't one, really, until he became leader in 2015. A newspaper like Us, which exists to look at all kinds of anti-Semitism, all kinds of issues that Jews should be interested in. We were aware of Jeremy Corbyn when he was a sort of non-entity backbencher in the Labour Party, when most people had never really heard of him or come across him. So we'd been following him. But, you know, even when we'd print stories about him, they'd be, you know, towards the back of the paper because he was a man of very little significance. But then in 2015, when he ran for the leadership of the party, which he'd already done before and been beaten a few times, but when he ran this time in 2015, there was a poll came out in July of 2015 of the four leadership contenders and showed that amongst Labour Party members, he was out ahead. And this came as an enormous shock to almost everybody. And it became obvious very soon that he was actually going to become the next Labour Party leader. So we did a leader, an opinion piece on the front page of our newspaper in August, which just outlined seven questions for Jeremy Corbyn to answer, and they were all to do with his associations with anti-Semites or Holocaust deniers. And we asked, you know, just reassure the Jewish community by answering these questions, such as, you know, why did you call members of Hezbollah and Hamas friends? Why have you donated funds and gone to meetings hosted by a man called Paul Eisen, who's a notorious Holocaust denier? Those kinds of things. And that was in August 2015. And to be blunt, we're still waiting for the answers.
Stephen, let's back up a bit, though. Tell us a bit about who Jeremy Corbyn is for our listeners. Obviously, now we know him as the leader of the Labour Party. And as you said, he'd been a backbencher. But who was he and what was his trajectory up until 2015?
So until 2015, Jeremy Corbyn had been in Parliament for 20 years or so. But he had been one of that kind of tiny fringe of the Labour Party from the extreme sort of revolutionary socialist end that was never anywhere near any position of influence. You would see them if you'd go to Labour Party conference every year, for instance. You would see Jeremy Corbyn and his allies sort of walking around with plastic bags full of leaflets to hand out to whoever they could find. And that was really the sum total of their influence. They were a tiny, tiny coterie that no one took any notice of, especially when the New Labour crowd and Tony Blair took over. They were even less of any consequence. And it would have taken the most astonishing act of prediction to ever conceive that he would be in any position of influence in the Labour Party, let alone leader of the party. It's almost impossible to overstate the shock that happened in July 2015 when it emerged in a poll in the Times newspaper amongst Labour Party members that he was ahead in the contest to succeed Ed Miliband, who was then the leader of the Labour Party. And then suddenly from that, he became leader of, you know, one of the greatest political movements and parties in the Western world.
You mentioned that in your leader, or editorial as we'd call it here, opinion piece, you listed a number of moments that you highlighted for the Jewish community. I'd like you to sort of break them down for us a little more carefully.
Sure. So one of them was, for instance, that he had hosted a meeting in the House of Commons by video link, obviously because the Hezbollah and Hamas members were not allowed into the country, but he'd introduced them as his friends. And this is not a one-off. You know, this is a consistent pattern that Jeremy Corbyn has both written and spoken about them as liberation movements, as freedom fighters, those kinds of things. So there was that. There's a man called Paul Eisen, who is a notorious Holocaust denier. Not only had Jeremy Corbyn been to a meeting where the hat was passed round and he gave a donation, but he, you know, even after Eisen was exposed as a Holocaust denier, Corbyn would go to meetings that Eisen had held. There are a number of other issues, such as a guy called Reed Suller, who was an Islamist preacher in Jerusalem, who was convicted of the blood libel in Israel. He came into the United Kingdom. There was a movement to have him expelled from the UK because he was an anti-Semitic preacher. Corbyn not only defended his right to be in the UK, but said that he would be, and the exact quote was, he would be an honoured guest if he invited him for tea in the House of Commons. So Corbyn defended a man who was about to be convicted of the blood libel. You know, there is a long-standing and pretty dispiriting history of Jeremy Corbyn allying with anti-Semites.
Was that trajectory, was it specifically aimed at Israel, or was it aimed at the Jewish community?
Now, the argument has always been that accusations of Corbyn's anti-Semitism are a smokescreen for his espousal of Palestinian rights, and that he's really anti-Israel. That's the kind of lie that's spread to undermine any accusations of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. There isn't a single Labour Party member that I can ever imagine who would in any way criticise Jeremy Corbyn or anybody else for espousing Palestinian rights. And yet, a number of those people have resigned from the Labour Party precisely because they can't cope with the anti-Semitism that Jeremy Corbyn has attracted to the Labour Party. So it's this elision of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism that's used by the Corbyn supporters to undermine accusations of anti-Semitism when Israel's got nothing to do with it. You know, there's no involvement of Israel, for instance, if you're defending or giving money to a Holocaust denier. There's no involvement of Israel if you're defending a man who puts forward the blood libel about Jews eating the blood of the firstborn. You know, that's not about Israel. That's straightforward anti-Semitism. And what we've seen since he became leader is exactly that. Yes, some of these anti-Semites who've been exposed have also put forward anti-Israel tweets and anti-Israel comments and so on. They would not have been criticised for those anti-Israel tweets. What it comes down to usually is you just dig a little bit below the surface, and what you discover is them talking. Usually it's about the Rothschilds running the world, about Jews controlling the media and banking, or Jews, as is the case with me, for instance. I get this said about me a lot, that I'm a paedophile. I've had photographs mocked up, for instance, and then posted on Labour Party websites. You know, this is the standard kind of anti-Semitic tropes that we've had for many, many years, and which are exactly the sort of things that the Corbynites push. And then they have the gall to say that this is actually all about Israel. It's about silencing Corbyn because he's pro-Palestinian.
Hi, I'm Margot Martindale, the host of Foreign Policy's new podcast, I Spy. Spies don't talk. It's one of the rules of the business. But here at Foreign Policy, we get them to open up. Each week, one former operative from somewhere around the world tells the story of one dramatic mission. Subscribe to iSpy wherever you get your podcasts.
There are a number of other sort of marker incidents, though, one of which included the laying of a wreath in Tunis. What was that story?
So this is a relatively complicated story, or at least it's been turned into a complicated story, that Corbyn was present at a wreath laying to mark the anniversary of the death of some of the terrorists involved in the Munich Olympic massacre of Israeli athletes. Now, the excuse that Corbyn used is that he was present but not involved. It's become that phrase, present but not involved, has been sort of used now to mock Corbyn about almost everything, because it took forever to drag out of the Labour Party any kind of response to the pictures that emerged of Corbyn being present at this ceremony. And then they said, you know, he just happened to be there, as if one just happens to be present at the wreath laying to commemorate the massacre of Israeli athletes. This is the kind of milieu in which Corbyn operated, in which Corbyn was comfortable for almost all his time pre-becoming leader of the Labour Party.
And Stephen, I just want to push back on one other thing quickly. You mentioned blood libel briefly. Just explain to me exactly, has he actually supported it? I mean, has he been vocally supportive of
conspiracy
theories around blood libel?
No. So Corbyn himself has never put forward the blood libel. That's sort of like a leap too far. But what he has done is defended a preacher, Reed Suller, who himself put forward the blood libel.
There have been a number of Jewish members of parliament who have either left the party or have expressed anxiety. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yes. So there have been two Jewish female Labour MPs who've both been effectively bullied out of the Labour Party. One was Luciana Berger, who was an MP for a Liverpool constituency, who received death threats. Incidentally, the Labour Party knew of those death threats towards her and didn't tell her about them. That's how much they, or how little, I should say, they cared about anti-Semitism and the well-being of one of their own MPs. But she resigned from the Labour Party in February because she was, in the end, she realised that there was no future for a Jewish female MP because of the way that the Labour Party had been overrun with anti-Semitic members. So she's now running for the Liberal Democrats, a smaller third party, in Finchley constituency, which is where she lives in London. Similarly, a very long-standing Labour MP called Dame Louise Ellman had also in Liverpool had constant battles in her constituency with anti-Semites, who every time she would stand up would start screaming, you know, here's the member for Jerusalem, oh yeah, why don't you go back to Tel Aviv, those kinds of things. And she resigned from the Labour Party too at the beginning of this election campaign and is not standing again. Another female Jewish Labour MP who has remained in the party is a woman called Dame Margaret Hodge, who in fact had the bravery, as it were, after one of these incidents with Jeremy Corbyn, to go up to him in the House of Commons and call him, and the exact words she used were, "You are a racist anti-Semite." And she called him that to his face. And she then faced disciplinary action, which was eventually dropped. But, you know, it's a pretty torrid time. And it's interesting that a lot of the hatred has been directed against female Jewish parliamentarians. There are plenty of male Jewish Labour MPs who've not had anything like the same vitriol directed against them. Now, that's partly because some of them are themselves Corbynites, but I think it's also because there's a very deep strand of misogyny which seems to run alongside the anti-Semitism. So it's quite striking that if you look not just amongst MPs, but if you look at some of the prime targets of the Corbynite anti-Semites, that a lot of their ire tends to be directed at women.
So Labour did a self-critical report on anti-Semitism in the party. That self-critical report on anti-Semitism, did it not produce some sort of action within the party?
The report you're referring to is the Chakrabarti inquiry, which was set up by Jeremy Corbyn when this issue of anti-Semitism emerged. The problem is it's widely regarded as being a complete and total waste of everybody's time, in that the report says you should basically make some improvements to the way you deal with this kind of stuff in the party, but really there's not really any problem to do with anti-Semitism. And this is, I think, is the crux of the problem with the Labour Party, is that they've not been willing at any point to confront the institutional racism that appears to be present in the party. Earlier this year, the Equality and Human Rights Commission, which is the statutory body set up under Tony Blair to look at racism and equality, launched an investigation into the Labour Party. The only other party that's ever been investigated in Britain is the British National Party, which is an avowedly neo-Nazi party. So, you know, this is quite an astonishing development.
So can you take us to the current campaign? How has Jeremy Corbyn dealt with the allegations of anti-Semitism?
The real problem with the current election campaign is that it hasn't really been an issue. There have been a couple of days where anti-Semitism has been on the agenda and he's been asked and confronted with it. Once was when my own newspaper we had a front page editorial which basically said to non-Jews, please read this and have a think about it. If you're considering voting for Jeremy Corbyn, have a think about what he actually does and what he stands for. And that, for about a day, got the agenda of the election shifted. And then it changed again when Corbyn was questioned by Andrew Neil, and there was his refusal to apologise for anti-Semitism, which I think a lot of people got very excited about, you know, what a terrible thing that he couldn't apologise. But it seemed to me it was a bit of a strange obsession in that, let's say he had said, I'm very sorry, what possible difference would that have made to anything? Because it wouldn't have fooled anyone. Nobody would care. It would just have been a form of words. The issue is the structural issue to do with the Labour Party itself.
Now, tell me, how do these incidences, how have they been absorbed by the Jewish community?
It's been a pretty unpleasant time to be a Jew in Great Britain. Now, one of the things that I always say is that basically there's been no place on earth in human history that's a better place to be Jewish than Great Britain now. And I think that's still the case. So it's important to get it in perspective. But the troubling thing is for most Jews in this country is that for the first time in certainly in my lifetime, and I'm 54, anti-Semitism is a live political debate. It's not something that occasionally we come across, but that it's out there and that is, you know, part of the current general election debate, for instance. You know, I've been editor of the Jewish Chronicle for 11 years. If you told me when I set out that I would spend the current sort of last 4 years pretty much writing about nothing except the anti-Semitism and the Labour Party, I'd have thought you were mad. But it's now an issue that is out there and is creating a kind of deeply anxious mood amongst British Jews. We did a poll of British Jews a few weeks ago, which found that 47% of British Jews have seriously considered, which was the language the pollsters used, have seriously considered emigrating if Jeremy Corbyn becomes Prime Minister. Now, that's not to say, even remotely, that 47% of British Jews will emigrate if he becomes Prime Minister. But the very fact that, you know, any Jewish community, that any minority, for instance, should feel so fearful of the prospect of somebody becoming Prime Minister that you would have to have that conversation in advance is itself a sort of telling indictment of the poison that Jeremy Corbyn's injected into British politics.
There have been a number of responses from Jewish leadership as well, including from the chief rabbi. What has that response been?
I think the really interesting thing from a Jewish perspective about all this is how it's changed the nature of the British Jewish community. Traditionally, certainly with respect to American Jews, we're regarded and have always regarded ourselves as being much more quiescent. We don't really like to put our head above the parapet. We tend to not want to antagonize people by speaking out. And that, you know, the traditional response of the British Jewish community to an incident or to a story such as this would be to stay quiet and not upset anybody. But that's changed dramatically over the last 4 years. A couple of years ago, they staged a rally outside the House of Commons with the slogan, Enough is Enough. And that was an unprecedented event for our community. And since then, and in so many different ways, the community has been much louder and much more unwilling to just quietly accept things. So you then ended up, the sort of apogee of that, as it were, is the chief rabbi at the end of November launching a pretty visceral attack on Jeremy Corbyn as effectively as an anti-Semite. And to say that's unprecedented doesn't even come close. I mean, chief rabbis, indeed faith leaders of any kind, never contribute to British politics. It's just not done at all. But his argument was, I'm not contributing to politics. What I'm doing is fighting racism, and that's what faith leaders should do. And when the chief rabbi spoke out, I think he had the overwhelming support of the majority of the Jewish community, who were relieved in a way that the chief rabbi would be willing to stand up and speak out against what Corbyn stands for.
In terms of the Jewish community in Britain itself, would there be a change in British policy?
So the issue for the Jewish community here isn't that, you know, we're suddenly going to see a hostile government. It's that this idea that Jews are, that we're an irritant and that we're not really properly British, will be allowed to flourish. If you think this is how Labour behaves in opposition, what would it be like actually in power? And that's what frightens, I think, a lot of British Jews. So there was a very telling clip that was revealed about 18 months or so of Jeremy Corbyn confronting two people who protested at a meeting he was speaking about, two Jewish protesters who stood up to confront him about some of his previous anti-Semitic links. And he referred to them as not understanding English irony properly. And it was a really telling example of how it's a kind of old-fashioned British anti-Semitism that somehow, you know, Jews don't properly fit in. We don't really understand the English way of thinking about things. And I think that, more than anything, is in a way frightening about the prospect of Corbyn as Prime Minister. Because, yes, he can say all the right words about wanting to protect synagogues and protect the Jewish community and so on, but actually deep down, you got quite a hint from that small sentence of what he actually thinks about Jews, which is that we're not properly really British. We're, as a lot of people think of Jews, you know, we're kind of outsiders who don't really fit in anywhere.
So what do you think this means, I mean, beyond this election, for the country going forward, the sense that anti-Semitism has become a plank in this election campaign?
I think the thing that's really important for people to bear in mind is that it's not about the Jews. Anti-Semitism is the harbinger of other forms of racism. First they turn on the Jews, but then they, you know, there's never any other minority that's safe in a society where the Jews are regarded as being fair game.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Stephen Pollard, editor of the Jewish Chronicle in London. First Person is produced by me, Sarah Wildman, along with help from Anis Modi and Benjamin Soloway. Our editor is Rob Sachs, and our executive editor for news and podcasts is Dan Efron. If you like this episode, please hit subscribe on your podcast app. Then tell your friends and tweet about it, and come back next week. We'll have a new episode.
Hi, I'm Margo Martindale, the host of Foreign Policy's new podcast, I Spy. Spies don't talk. It's one of the rules of the business. But here at Foreign Policy, we get them to open up. Each week, one former operative from somewhere around the world tells the story of one dramatic mission. Subscribe to iSpy wherever you get your podcasts.